engaging and exciting conversation on life, God, and pop culture. Every week on the Radiant Culture Podcast.
All right, how's it going, everybody? Welcome to Radiant Culture. I'm Cookie Monster. And today, we have the one and only. I'll let him introduce himself.
Mr. Kent.
Mr. Kent.
The only one.
The one and only.
Yes.
The man who's always in stealth mode is with us today. He's with us today. And then. We also have in the house, the Biscuit.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, Biscuit doesn't need no introduction.
I need no introduction.
Okay, so today we have a very, very exciting topic that we want to discuss, right? And this one is burning. It's like burning in my heart. And I think everyone is quite keen on this one. So today we're going to be talking, our discussion is going to be centered around the Black Panther movie. Right. Over the last few weeks, I think the whole world has been abuzz with this movie, and there's been all kinds of comments, and I think the ratings of the movie are crazy. But, you know, I watched the movie myself the day that it was released here, and I'm about to go for round two and probably round three later, right, because I like it that much. However, we want to talk about the movie itself and break it down a bit and talk about some of the philosophy behind it. So, I guess we'll get straight into it, right? Gentlemen, let's talk about this.
First of all, why do we have Biscuit as a guest?
Okay, so, I didn't actually mention that Biscuit was a guest. But anyway, I'm going to mention it now.
Biscuit, I'm not a guest, really.
Biscuit
Come
is
on.
Actually a guest today. So he's sitting in the guest seat, right?
In because the guest seat. It doesn't look so comfortable from here, though, I have to say.
It's blue.
What are you saying about
it? It's nice.
Guest seat, though, just Listen, saying, you know.
Yeah.
Quality control.
It's comfortable.
It's comfortable. You know what? Maybe we need to actually start charging people, right? So if people pay like $100 per episode, then we can get like some nice, expensive exactly. furniture.
I think, yeah, I agree with that.
Yeah.
I mean, as the guest here, I should have like a throne or something. Come on, Wakanda.
You're not T'Challa.
This is for Jesus. Anyway, today Biscuit is a guest because, I don't think anybody really knows. But Biscuit is actually a very, very... avid follower of the Marvel universe and all that comic stuff, right? Comic book stuff. In fact, let me not put it that way. Biscuit is an animator, right? He's like deep at animation and he's studied this stuff. He's been doing this stuff for years. So he's got a very proficient understanding of how all this stuff works. And I'll let him explain. But yeah, Biscuit, he's like our expert in this thing. Yeah.
Biscuit. No, I think they've got me here just because I watched the movie 3 times. So
already,
I think I'm a professor now for Kandology. just from that's why I'm here. That's why
there we
got
go.
Me here.
There we go. But I think yeah. beyond that, you've got like this crazy background.
I'm actually a comic artist as well as an animator and illustrator. So.
Not like I've Trevor Noah comic.
No. You know, and that's the horrible thing. Whenever I saw people, I'm a comic artist. Say, tell us a joke, eh? Tell us a joke. You think you're funny, eh? And I'm like, no, not that type of joke. But I'm an illustrator comic artist. I've been doing this now for plus minus 15 years. So, Marvel, DC got me into it, as well as Image, Dark Horse, Wildstorm, Top Cow, Valiant, all the other guys. Big avid watcher of anime and reader of some mangas. Disney is not my idol, but where people want to be like Beyonce, I'm going in a completely different direction. So
you're the weird guy.
I am the weird guy. I'm the weird guy in any group, which is why I am the Biscuit, the extra one. I've always got a viewpoint, and I think doing Rima Popeye for so long has also made me a bit of a thinker. So yeah, that's what it's called here in Zimbabwe. Anybody who doesn't know,
I hadn't heard that Rima expression Popeye. In a very long time. But anyway, it's okay. So you know, we want to talk about this from a Christian point of view, you know, because there've been a lot of mixed views about it, of course, as any other movie would have. But maybe, you know, I'll start with Mr. Kent here, that from a Christian perspective, or just looking at it from a Christian lens. There's a, I know one of the reasons why this movie is so popular is because of the whole black consciousness thing,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
And well, when we come to the Bible, for example, the Bible is talking about how there's no longer Jew nor Greek, slave nor free, that we're all one in Christ.
Yeah.
And I've seen some of the people making the most noise about this are actually Christians and even pastors, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So doesn't this then fuel the very thing that the Bible is trying to discourage, which is the whole division, the whole racial tension and all of that? So maybe we can start it there.
Okay. I think it's probably the most powerful movie, one of the most powerful movies I've watched, in the sense that it's gone beyond just entertainment. It's inspired a movement. It's awakened something in people. So that's great, but obviously there are pros and cons to everything. So from a Christian perspective, the great thing is that you're, you know, encouraging or you're inspiring a sense of self-worth in a race that was most of the time depicted as, you know, the dark continent, the inferior race, you know mm-hmm. what I mean? And that brings a sense of self-worth and that Africa rising kind of vibe to it. But I think the downside, or where we have to be careful is that we don't fuel or further fuel this racial divide, where we are now trying to say, okay, we're not inferior. In fact, we are superior. And that's the gray area. That's the risk. And that's the downside to this whole thing. So it's something that we have to be careful about if taken overboard.
I'll say, before we get too far in this, being somebody who talks about this sort of stuff often, note to all listeners, spoiler warning. If you don't like spoilers, I'll give you a second to change channel. You can come back at the end of the discussion for closing points. This is your warning, because we may make spoilers here. If you haven't watched the movie, you're bad. Give you a second. That's enough time. Done your thing. Right. The Black Panther is unapologetically focused on the black consciousness. And it does not shy away from the idea of race. And it speaks about it in a way that hasn't been brought to the mainstream media before. This is different from anything that's come before it. And it's very groundbreaking. So as was said, it does it has lent itself to creating this movement. Not that it set out to create a movement. It's a movement has been birthed around it.
Yeah.
And that leads me to my first point concerning the movie. It's a movie. Not to demean it, but much of the noise around it was not generated or intended to be generated by the people who created the movie. They sought out to make a fantastic movie. I had some discussions with some people who watched the movie, and they were like, you know what? I went in there, there was a lot of hype around it, and I was already set against the movie because I didn't want to bow to the hype. I was like, this is probably not going to be good. They came out of it with a very different opinion, saying, I hate to admit it, but it kind of worked up to the hype. My response to them was, the hype was never created by the movie. Nowhere did Marvel ever advertise that the first all-African cast or a striking blow to imperialism in this new... They never said anything to that effect. But the movie is what it is. And it's designed for you to take from it a series of messages, not even just one.
Right.
So much of the anger we see post... And let's not just look at the anger. Let's look at the joy and the jubilation as well that has come out from about around it. Was not made. It was not manufactured. It's come from the people arriving at their own conclusions outside the movie. The movie is not necessarily pushing anyone in any direction, in so much as it's right, it's bringing to the forefront what some people were already thinking. If they were angry before the movie, they're angrier after the movie. But they were always angry. So I'll start with that.
Okay. All right. Thank you for that, because I think that's an important backdrop, right, to the discussion and just to this, to the whole issue we're discussing here. So what we need to understand here, because I don't want this to be a review of the movie per se, but I really want us to extract,
because I can do that too.
Yeah, this is not Rotten Tomatoes, Andy, right, or something like that. So what I want to try and understand here, and I guess our listeners, is this. The fact that Marvel didn't explicitly say, you know, this is a black consciousness movie and whatnot, but people still managed to do so on a universal scale, right? I think speaks of something, right? Something within people resonates with, I guess, some of the fundamental lessons that are in that movie, if I can call them that.
Yeah.
So, as Christians now, black African Christians, we've grown up in a country, and I'm gonna go there, right? Because I think we have to. We've grown up in a country that was colonized by the British, the Europeans, and most of Africa was
all of it, but one country.
Exactly. There we go. And I feel like a part of our identity, a part of our essential worth, was taken away because of things that happened, to the point where people have started believing that if something is black, it's not good enough.
Mm-hmm.
You know, black people can never achieve certain things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Black actors and actresses can never act in some of the roles that were acted, which is actually part of the reason why the movie is so popular.
Yes.
So the question then is, the Bible, right? Can we then really say that our colonizers, and I know in the movie is actually a part where the white guy and this is referred to as the colonizer. I totally love that. Right. Right. The question I want to ask is the Bible itself and Africa, right? Part of the reason why a lot of people actually don't want to believe in the Bible is that they believe that it was a tool, a colonization tool.
Yeah.
So maybe let's just discuss that for a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yes.
Give me a question.
Well,
you've stated a fact.
Yes, right? Yeah. No, I guess the question for me is that true?
You gotta open your eyes, man. You gotta open your You gotta be woke, man. You gotta be woke. The man is after you. Look, it's easy to go down that route. I'm definitely not one of those guys, though. Much love to my woke conscious brothers and sisters. I think the whole world's getting woke.
Yeah.
If you want to say that. The biggest problem that's been on planet Earth has been the people on it, for the most part.
Uh-huh.
Good things come to us and we have a tendency to try and reshape them in our own image. And in a nutshell, that is part of what happened in terms of the gospel coming to Africa, in my viewpoint. In of itself was fine. It was cool. And it was refashioned by some people. Maybe powerful people, maybe the vocal few, to serve their own ends and to serve greed. But that does not mean that it itself was inherently bad. The downside is that as history and time goes on, some things get engraved which were wrong, and they become problematic later. So it's a very, very large topic. It's a very big can of worms. Yeah, I'll need more questions to get to a specific aspect of it that you want me to tackle.
Okay. Well, listen, this is just a discussion, I guess. not an interview per se, you know, one of those.
Yeah.
Okay, I've got a question.
Yeah.
So, we were colonized,
uh-huh,
and they used religion, Christianity, right?
Yeah.
Fair and fine. Do you think that if we hadn't been colonized, Africa will be like Wakanda?
All right. The movie Black Panther is really interesting because it's got all these characters that everyone is asked to either agree with or disagree with. Characters in terms of the actual people and characters in terms of the world itself. Wakanda itself being a character. Wakanda refers not just to the Africans, but it also refers to African Americans to some extent.
Right.
We can come back to that point a little later. What I'm trying to say here is that one aspect of Wakanda that's unique to the film and partly to the world, if you ever get to that question, is that it was an isolationist nation with unlimited resources. They could make everything out of their vibranium. They did not need to look outside of themselves, mm-hmm. which is different from Ethiopia. Ethiopia could not be isolationist. And the minute they decided to resist everyone around them, they were actually trapped,
right.
which is a bit different from Wakanda, who could self-sustain. So naturally, a nation that is trapped on all sides and is more or less in sanctions, if you want to call it that, from the world, who did not agree with them resisting so much, would inevitably suffer. What is a bigger testament is that they are still free up until today, despite that situation.
Right.
They are still standing despite that.
But at the cost of economic development.
At the cost of that, true. But that is where they're different from Wakanda. If Ethiopia had vibranium, yes, indeed, they would be a Wakanda, because they would never have had to look outside their borders for anything that they needed. Anything.
Something that's always bothered me is that when the story of Africa is told, right, the picture that is painted is that we were uncivilized and backward in the way that we did our things, and we used to run around with spears and, you know, loincloths and whatever, and the rest of the world was becoming more advanced. And so the colonizers had to come to bring civilization, right? That's the narrative that's been told, to the point where some of us actually started to believe that. But I remember part of me has always argued, right? Something deep within me has always said, but this doesn't make sense. How can the rest of the world be going through the Industrial Revolution, Iron Age, all the different movements that have happened, progressions in development. And we remain stagnant, right? We were just walking around doing nothing, a whole civilization. Then you look at some of the, you know, you look at things like the pyramids, you look at the Great Zimbabwe even, you know, all these structures which show intelligence, which show very sharp thinking, architecture, architectural strategy, all of that stuff, which means that these things were here. But for some reason, I feel like they were taken away, right? To the point where Africans have started to believe that we don't have what it takes. Silicon Valley is the only one that can produce these things. So for me, the question then becomes, how can we as Africans, right, change the narrative, take back what is supposed to be ours, change history even, you know, go back to our history and try to understand who we are? Because I believe that's part of our God-given right, right? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that's a very good question, but to sort of answer you, I think we need to ask, what's the root cause? Was colonization really the root cause? Because you seem to say this was taken away from us. So you're implying that Africa is not as advanced as it should have been because we were colonized.
Yes.
Or these people came. But I'm saying, was it really the colonization, or was it a mentality that we had as Black people? Because for colonization to happen, let's even talk pre-colonization. Let's talk slavery. Slavery would not have happened if you read the stories and watch the movies and the documentaries and whatnot. Slavery was enabled by Africans. It was Africans who were capturing their own brothers and sisters and selling them to the slave traders. The slave traders did not come in and capture anyone. They came in, struck a deal with the warlords and said, you, I will give you guns and I'll give you these things if you capture some of your strong, fit people. They went out capturing their own and selling them, right? Same thing with colonization, right? I did a bit of history, so I only know the Zimbabwean part of the history, but I know that the colonizers, when they came, they didn't just come and just spray guns and gun us down and shut us down, right? They came and they saw that there was a king, and they talked to that king. They negotiated with the king, and that king sold the country to the queen.
Okay.
Okay. I would say this.
So my question is, was it colonization or was it a mindset that we had?
All right. If there is any mindset to be had, and as a caveat to this, I will say we must be careful of every ounce of history that you ever consume at any stage.
True.
Because most of it is written by the victors of whatever history that came from, including our own. We know our own country has indirectly erased stories and knowledge of anyone that's not of a particular group or leadership structure. Yeah. And they conveniently forget those stories because they're the victors. And it's true globally. Mm-hmm. As long as the colonizers were the victors, they chose the history. That story of us, of them having it sold to them by Lobengula and co, we really don't know. We really don't know if that was the truth. We don't know. If that's how it went down. For all we know, they were like, you know what? If we're going to look great to the queen, like we didn't do this violently, this is the story we're going to tell. So I'm not even saying it's not true. I'm just saying we must be careful of everything, that's including the stories of us going and finding the slaves ourselves. We don't know this.
Yeah.
We really don't. But
it's happening again.
Is it?
Yes, in Libya. It's happening.
Mm-hmm. But you know where my
it's
issue...
Libyans capturing other Libyans to sell them as slaves.
Before we get into even the definition of slavery, because we can go and say that that's happening even in America right now. I will say this to answer your earlier question. If there's any one mindset that you want to say that Africans have, and I may be unpopular for this viewpoint, but my viewpoint is that Africans, black people, are the most peaceful race on the planet. I firmly believe this.
Uh-huh.
Because we have the most justified reason to go crazy and violent and strike back, and we don't. When the colonizers actually came to Africa, we didn't run. The traditional mindset that we've been taught is that foreign things are scary to you. Things that are outside of you must be feared, which is, I think, an attitude that lots of other nations have. Africa didn't have that. These were just strange people. We know the stories we've heard that when we saw the white man coming, what was that name we gave them? Just saying that they didn't have, what was that
knees.
Word? Yeah.
Asnamabi.
They were just people who didn't have knees to us because we couldn't see their legs. They were wearing trousers. Yeah. So we're like, they don't have knees. But we didn't freak out. We actually wanted to talk to these guys and say, hey, what are you here for? Okay, do you want to trade?
Actually, the narrative is that there was the prophet, that guy, what's his name? The guy who predicted they'll come. Was it Rekai Tangwena? I think it was Rekai Tangwena, who said before they actually landed, said, there are people coming. And he's the one who coined that phrase.
Yes.
And they don't have knees. Right? Yeah. Wanamavi. And they're coming to take your land.
True. But he may have warned them, but it wasn't received like that across the board. Our first reaction was not to arm ourselves and prepare for an attack. Yeah. Our first reaction was, hi, who are you? What are you doing here? It wasn't an aggressive approach. And I think that happened across Africa and it was taken advantage of. We mustn't mistake our acceptance of them as a weakness that we had. It was more an aggression on their part to see that and say, hey, these guys can be taken advantage of.
They're dumb.
They saw it as dumb. Uh-huh. For us, it was just a more peaceable nature, I believe.
I think I like that. And I also want to challenge what you're saying.
Hold on.
Okay. I want to challenge what you're saying about our mindset. Because I don't think that's necessarily a mindset that is unique to black people or African
people. No, it's not unique to us. No.
You see what I mean? I think you're dealing with human nature, right, at best, which is that humans, obviously, across the board, have a certain way of approaching things, right? So, for example, you know that even in the most developed of nations, if there's a bargain that's being, if there's a deal that's being structured, you're always going to have greedy people who are going to try to maximize as much as possible on that.
Yeah.
You know, you're going to have people who are going to try to make sure that they do whatever they can to get the biggest pie and sell whoever they can sell. That's why you've even got this whole thing happening with the sex slavery and all of this stuff. Because I think it's a human thing. But I don't want us to dwell too much on this because this can become a very...
Yeah, it can become a very...
rabbit trail. I think I want to bring it back to the issue of the Bible, because this is really what we're talking about.
Yeah.
To say that, doesn't this movie, right, this fictional place, this Wakanda place, doesn't it really speak of something about us as black people? And I even want to bring the God factor in here to say that for the longest time, I think black people have been made to believe that you're either second rate or you don't really have what it takes.
Yeah.
Either you're living in Africa, which is the, you know, the poorest continent, or one of, or you're living in the US where you're a minority group that is struggling, right? So wherever black people are, for some reason, we're the inferior race. So my question is, Wakanda, when we bring it back to that, isn't that also speaking to something within us that says, listen, I'm different. I have, you know, we're actually a very clever, sharp people. We're equally capable of producing the technologies and all the different things that the rest of the world is producing. But maybe it's just because that was taken away. So what? Was that the devil? Maybe that was like the devil's strategy, bruh. To just like...
Well, I would agree and say that if you can, we know the devil really, he seeks to just divide people, and that really keeps people fighting amongst themselves and forgetting what's truly important. Seeing as we're using Black Panther as an example, to any Christians who want to go and watch the movie, I will point out that there's a heck of a lot of paganism that goes on in there. Yeah. There's a lot of ancestral stuff that's going on in there that we are not saying we agree with at all. We're talking about the overall message that is embedded within the movie that I think is a message that transcends even those depictions of whatever messy stuff that's in there. But yes, it is talking about a deep inner belief within Africans, within African Americans, within black people that not that we are better than, but that we are equal. And I think God put that in everyone.
Yeah.
We know, we all know we are equal. And anyone who goes against that is in pride. They're doing that for themselves. They don't want to know or acknowledge that we're equal for their own personal gain, for greed, as you mentioned.
Yeah.
But everyone on the planet does know, deep inside, we're the same. And movies like Black Panther seek to bring that equilibrium back. The movie doesn't say, rise up, my black people, and take over the nations. No, it doesn't say that at all, particularly if you're a smart Marvel movie watcher and you wait until the post-credit scene.
Yeah.
It really does try and hark to the point that we have more alike than we have different.
Right.
We are the same. Let's work together. But to work together, we need to first kind of even these scales, because right now, they're uneven.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Okay. That's actually interesting. It actually got me thinking, actually, while watching the movie. I think one of the things that I really enjoyed was how they differentiated themselves from the rest of the world, you know, and that Wakanda doesn't go out there to conquer. You know how, you know, they're not like the colonizer.
Yeah.
And like you said, if you watch the post-credit scenes,
yeah,
you'll see that when they went to the UN, they, spoiler alert for those that didn't watch it, when they went to the UN, they wanted to share their technology, their wealth, to make the world a better place, not to take over.
Yeah.
So it's kind of differentiating Africans as a different kind of race, which you alluded to earlier, that we are very peaceful people and we don't like to conquer, which kind of makes, you know, I've always been asking that, why didn't Africans go out there to colonize Europe?
Yeah.
Why
we've never gone anywhere to go really and aggressively no take anyone's
to.
Space.
We've never really had a sense to go and take over someone else's territory. We were just within what would fight within
yeah,
each
fight
other.
Within,
but,
yeah,
but I'm saying that peace-loving thing. And I think that's an attribute that's very good. Take, for example, even just in the way we talk to each other, our cultural norms and traditions. You know, something very interesting that was highlighted by a friend of mine on his Facebook page, where he said, have you ever noticed the greetings that we have in Shona, mm-hmm. in most African countries? You know, when you wake up, you don't just say good morning and then the person says, oh, good morning to you. You know, you know, we say mamuka se, mm-hmm. and then the response is tamuka kana mamuka.
Yeah.
So I'm only good if you're good.
Yeah. To speak into that, one of my relatives who's teaching, she's a professor in the US, she put up a question on her Facebook saying, what is the appropriate way for me to address people in email? Is it okay when I'm emailing people? Because she wanted to really get this. It's like, do I just get right to the point, guys? Or is it the African in me who always wants to start with dear something or something? I hope you've had a great week. Yeah. Now into the business. Yeah. And overwhelmingly, the responses on her post were Africans saying, guys, bottom line, us Africans can't deal with this. Hi, I want this. We need to be acknowledged as people, greeted, check how I am, then ask for what you want.
Yeah.
And it's an African thing.
And it's a great thing.
It's a great thing.
And my point now is, I know I'm going to sound a bit controversial, in that it got me thinking that Christianity came. Did it steal some of the good aspects of our tradition?
Now you're touching on something.
You get what I mean? Came and we had this rich culture that was so good, and Christianity comes. And my question is, did it steal it or did we allow it to steal?
Here's the thing. We must be careful with that statement. Christianity didn't take anything. Christianity, the belief, didn't take anything.
Okay, yeah.
Culture stole culture. It was a war of cultures.
The
Christianity that came from the north, the northerners, the Christianity that came with them came with their culture. It was a culturalized Christianity. And that culture of theirs did not match our culture. So it sought to stamp out ours. The belief in one true God, the belief in Christ, those things were not out to destroy. If anything, they were out to liberate.
Yeah.
But the if I can go there, the Roman Catholic way of life was now a culture.
Yeah.
That was now a saying that we need to live like the learning English is a culture thing.
Mm. Yeah.
That had nothing to do with the faith that was coming with us. It was just tagged along and boxed into one package and said, accept our faith by accepting our culture. Do it or die. That's where things got messed up.
So I think what actually needs to happen is that the gospel needs to be rescued from
good.
That.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because you find that what has happened through the years is that we end up associating anything with our culture, for example, with black magic and dark stuff. And of course, listen, there are many, I think when the gospel comes, it does deal with all those.
It does deal with some things.
Because the Bible does talk about that, right? That he's translating us from the dominion of darkness into light.
Yeah.
However, it doesn't mean that if something is white, it's right.
True. And unfortunately, you know what I mean? It was stamped with that.
And even, you know, I was thinking when I was watching the movie, the whole, spoiler alert. You know, when he has to receive the spirit of the Black Panther, in fact, he doesn't receive it until they have to take it out before the fight. That whole thing happens and he goes to meet his ancestors. I actually like the fact that they did that. And I'll tell you why. I like it because I think they tried to depict as much as possible what Africa is actually about. Because this is what used to happen.
Yes.
People did used to do ancestral worship guns and all of that, right? And even the whole thing with totems, that was a part of our culture as Africans.
Yeah.
And yes, we don't advocate for the worship of ancestors and stuff because the gospel brings something better, something higher.
Yeah.
However, I don't think it's right, for us to demonize anything that does not, or rather to demonize anything that has those things in it, right? To say it's all dark, it's all devilish, and just blanket it.
Yeah.
And so maybe I wanted to discuss that a little bit.
It's the thing is we blanketed it, and to serve the ends of a particular group of people, it was also now the demonization of a race group. Through the Bible, we have instances where they go to places where they are already worshiping false gods and whatever.
Yes.
But what's different between that and what we see happening in real life is that they bring the gospel to these guys and say, stop doing what you're doing. Join us. What happened in real life was you are the bad thing that you're doing. Your race and your spirituality are one and the same. They didn't treat it the same as they did for the Greeks and say, no, you're just worshiping the wrong thing.
Yeah.
It was almost like, it's almost suggested that it's like, hi guys, you're white, we're white. You're worshiping the wrong thing. Forget that, join us. Mm. It was kind of, they came here and said, you're black and you're spiritual, both are bad. You need to discard both of them. And by the way, even if you discard the other, you're still now not as cool as us. It's a subtle difference in how it happened, but it created a trauma in us black people that resulted in us having this perpetuated inferiority complex. Rather than dealing with whatever's bad in the spiritual realm, let's deal with that.
Yeah.
That doesn't have a bearing on your identity as a human being.
Yeah.
And that's where the disconnect happened, I think.
I think, and I really like what you said about rescuing the gospel, because it's been hijacked. and it's sort of like what Paul was really emphasizing when he was saying, you know, in Christ Jesus, there's no Jew, no Greek, no slave, no free.
Yeah.
You know, we are one in Christ Jesus. And if you look at it, these problems were there in the early church, where, you know, certain sects from within the Jews were going out to preach the gospel with circumcision. And Paul was saying, guys, okay, you know, this is Jewish culture now.
Yeah.
You know, we have to now separate this from the gospel. This is Jewish culture now. And even if you look at when he went and preached to other cultures, like to the Greeks, he actually went in there and he knew they were idol worshippers, and he used that to his advantage. And he went in and said, see, I see there's an idol here with the inscription, an unknown God.
Yeah.
You know, and he used that and says, let me tell you about this. You know, so I think that in rescuing the gospel, and this is what I loved about the movie, in that it took me back and said, and started making me think that, look, what are some of the things from my culture that I've thrown away that actually are not in conflict with the gospel?
That's an important question.
That's a very, very, and very important question.
It brings those things up now and say, okay, I'm African, I'm black, and there are certain good things that we were doing before, and we've left them because of the gospel and the way it was presented.
Yeah.
And in rescuing the gospel, it's now going back to those things and aligning them with the gospel to say, okay, this is a good thing.
Yeah.
You know, the Bible says, love your neighbor as yourself. So for me to ask you to mamuka se, and tamuka na mamukao, is, you know,
it's showing that love. It's exactly being that way.
Yeah. Even when you look at our culture, the whole thing, you know, just the whole element of decency.
Yes.
You know what I mean? We grew up knowing
that our forefathers were not decent.
It's a relative question.
Swaziland.
Okay. Let me speak. Let's just appreciate my culture.
You know what's there.
No, but I guess.
I know where you're coming from.
Swaziland. Yo. But you know what I'm saying? Like, a parent, a child is raised by the whole village or the whole community, right? Every elderly woman is my mother. Mm-hmm. So there was that whole thing.
Speaking into that, I really thought about that the third screening I had of the movie. I loved the throne room, the king's throne room. And what was very interesting about that throne room is, if you noticed, throughout the whole movie, he never made a decision solo.
Yes.
It was always in agreement with the other tribes that were represented in Wakanda. It was, guys, I'll make the final decision, sure, but he was actually the youngest guy, it seemed, in that whole throne room. Uh-huh. But he had his elders all there, and they listened to him. They acknowledged his position, but they also spoke to him. And it's that whole way of leadership, that whole way of community, is again another thing that we should celebrate and keep and say that is part of our culture. We need to keep that going, not just shun it because of any other misconstructed ideas.
That's good. That's good. But again, bringing it back to, you know, to the gospel and to the fact that, you know, storytelling and media has such power and, you know, has such an impact that it can make for the gospel. So I guess what I want us to talk about as we come to a close here is that what lessons do we draw from that, of things that we can learn as believers, right? As black people as well, right? About what we can do, even as the church, right? What can we do to tell our story better? What can we do to make the gospel that much more appealing? And because it's an amazing story. It's the best story ever told. But we tell it so poorly sometimes. You know what I'm saying? So, what lessons can we learn from this movie?
Just before you go, Biscuit, I think a heavily overlooked fact is that the bulk of Jesus's ministry was storytelling. And that's how he presented the gospel to the people, because he knew the power of those stories.
Mm.
And that's the bulk of it. And I don't know why, as Christians, we're not at the forefront where our founder, the founder of the faith, the center of the faith, had storytelling as the center of his message. And we have totally neglected it. And the world tells their stories so well. That's and you know, the Bible says we exchange the truth for the truth for a lie, because the lie is told so well.
Yeah.
Yeah, we've kind of divorced storytelling from what it's actually meant to be. And a story is a way of keeping an image in your head. Really, at the end of the day, it's like a visualization. And we do need to take advantage of that and actually start telling our story. I love the fact that the Bible does state, you know, study to show yourself approved. And I think that's a principle for life.
Yeah.
Don't just tell any story. At least don't be scared to dig, to find out, to get to the bottom of the thing, and then tell the authentic, true story that you can. But we do need to actually just start telling them. We've lived too long being ashamed of our story. I would say that. Ashamed and scared to tell our story as though there's something wrong with it. But there's strength in it as well. There's strength in that background. There's strength in those identities. And yeah, all we can say is we should be doing it. And there is no one way to do it, or one route to do it, or one catalyst to start us doing it. It's literally just to get up and start telling it. If Black Panther's anything to go by, money's a good reason. It's made a lot of it.
And what now?
They were, as of 2 days ago, 402 million globally. And it was already the number one movie
in the
States. That's
double the budget.
So if one African story can do that, can you imagine what other stories are here on this continent?
But why is it that we are not investing in telling stories in Africa? I mean, the world all over, like, the Chinese are big on telling their stories.
Nollywood.
Nollywood, exactly. Well, Nollywood is trying, but it's coming
out
now. But we have been sluggish. And we don't really, you know, invest in storytelling.
For the risk of coming off harsh or whatever, Africa is known as an oral tradition continent. We know that we used to tell a lot of stories. The question then becomes, why did we stop? It's not for want. And when you investigate why we stopped, you still come back to the same conclusion that we were kind of told to stop, or made to stop, or taught that our story was not good enough. The Asians were like Wakanda. They became isolationists, the Chinese in particular.
Okay.
They shut themselves off, built that, and then opened their doors later. So they developed that desire for that story.
Yeah.
The West have done the same thing. They were off there on their own continent, happily telling their own stories.
Yeah.
Whereas here, we were actively told not to. You mentioned, Cookie, earlier about how we had this wonderful history and were we not doing things beforehand. Much of the knowledge and the history of our past, things like Timbuktu and whatever, all those great libraries burnt down, actively destroyed. Again, I'll go back to Black Panther. They mention it subtly in the movie where the agent says, Killmonger was taught to do this, that you go in, you destabilize, you take power, you overthrow, and you destroy. He destroyed the future of the Black Panthers by getting rid of that garden.
Yes.
And it's the same with us Africans.
Yeah.
Our history was destroyed to prevent us from ever really rising properly. And it's going to take a lot of effort to dig back to find it. It's not gone forever.
Yeah.
But it does take effort to dig in. It takes kind of an awakening, a realization that it has value.
Yeah.
I would say if there is one thing we can do right now, anyone listening who wants to get into this, we need to teach the value of that African history and identity.
Yeah.
And the learning or understanding of that value will make more people want to tell the stories or create more in the vein of those things. But as long as we don't see value in it, we won't dig it up.
True.
We won't try make more of it. We just won't try to create. Mm. The value is the issue. Our idea of its value is where the problem lies.
Yeah. Mm. Wow.
And you know, just as we close, you know, a very powerful verse, you know, it's been repeated a lot of times. And I started mulling over it towards the end of last year, and it's becoming very central in terms of my faith. It's that verse in Revelation that says, they overcame by the blood of the Lamb and the word of their testimony. And a testimony is a story.
Yeah.
You know, a witness in a court is testifying, is telling the story.
Yeah.
True.
And if that's how we overcome, why are we not telling these stories? Why are we not testifying?
That's true.
We don't just have, we're not limited to just going into the streets and telling someone a story, but we can make a movie, we can write a book, we can have a poetic piece and tell the story.
Hey, we can go further than that. Tell a story with how you carry yourself, your dress even.
Exactly.
Yeah.
The fact that we're wearing bow ties, let me put that, we're not actively right now wearing bow ties, I'm just saying figuratively, is a story of Europe. Those things went from here. We're telling a story,
yes,
whether we like that or not.
Yeah.
And the same way you see the regalia of the guys in Nigeria, those lovely, huge outfits, there's a story that they're telling. There's so many ways to tell stories. And we need to testify, I guess in Christianity, we testify with our actions, with our behaviors, with the way we carry ourselves.
Yeah.
It's the same for everything else.
Cool. So I think what I'm getting from this discussion, gentlemen, which is a very rich discussion, and I think one that actually probably needs a part two, is that, number one, as Africans and as Black people, we need to realize that there's a uniqueness to how God made us. Right. And that we should not allow anyone or anything to demean that, because it's actually a gift from God. Right. And it's not to cause us to be inflated in ourselves and think we're better than everybody or whatever. But the point is that God made us the way we are for a reason. Right. Yeah. And we should treasure that. We should learn that. We should embrace that. That's the first thing. And I think to the believers, to those of us that are believers, we should embrace everything we embrace, knowing that a gift that God gives us, it gives us for a reason, that God wants us to do something with that. And then I think speaking to those of us that are in media and those of us that have the gift to tell stories, right, that we should start doing something about it, right?
Yeah.
Let's start representing Christ in everything we do. Let's start becoming more proactive in creating stuff. Or I don't know what it is that's on your heart, but I think, you know, we should really begin to do that, because if we don't tell the story, no one is ever going to hear it. To tell your own story, even, right? Because your story is unique, how God saved you, the things you've been through, and you never know who that could minister to. And I think it's important for us to really begin to think think in those terms. But anyway, so much to talk about, but I think this has been
good.
And just for the record, Anai is actually Biscuit's cousin, like no jokes, like they're cousins. Can you handle? Like cousins.
You know what?
How cool is that?
You know, I was introduced yesterday when I went for dinner with some guys, and I was walking out to go get my phone. I left it in the car, and I saw a friend of mine sitting with two other ladies. So I went and said hi to her, and she introduced me to the other ladies. And said, "Oh, hi! This is Danai's cousin." So I was like, "Dude, really though?
But
really, guys?
I think you should milk it, bro."
Yeah.
I met Lupita, by the way.
I'm kind of annoyed that you didn't.
Guys,
he did not even know who she was when he met her.
I met Lupita in New York.
A couple of years ago.
He just thought it's some lady who performed in the play. He's like, what the heck?
Right. And but then afterwards, I'm like, no, snap. I should have gotten her number or something. But anyway, it's been good. It's been real. I'm Cookie Monster.
Mr. Kent.
Wakanda forever.
Wakanda forever.
I'm Biscuit.
Outro is that?
Thank you for listening to this week's episode of the Radiant Culture Podcast. If you want to make a contribution, make a suggestion, or have a request, you can get in touch with us via email on radiant@thehub.co.zw or inbox us on Facebook and Twitter. Look out for the next episode and remember to share this one with everybody you know. God bless.
It's hot, it's fresh, it's uncut. #RealTalk on the Radiant Culture Podcast.